This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to the morning run on BFM 89.9, the business station. Good morning. It's Friday, the 24th of February, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han this morning.
Good morning. Good happy morning. Friday.
Happy Friday or happy Fri-yay. It doesn't get old saying that. TGIF, I could go on. We'll stay with us this morning because we've got lots of great shows coming up your way on the Breakfast Grill today. Julian Ng will be speaking to Datuk Wira Muhammad Latip Sarugi. He is the chairman of the Malaysian Franchise Association. Quite interesting because, you know, we've seen some issues creep up within the franchise space. Cha Time, La Kafa and Loop Holdings being one of the most high-profile cases.
That's right. So I think overnight there has been this one particular blog posting that's been making its rounds on social media, essentially adding another side to this entire saga here, basically La Kafa's side over there from Taiwan. You know, of course, here in the domestic space, we have been hearing plenty from Brian Liu. He has been making his media rounds, even here at BFM 89.9. You know, but so it seems that there's a lot more to this story that we are actually aware of, you know. So, I mean, although I guess you know, what has actually transpired on the ground is the actual rebranding of Cha Time to Tea Live, Tea Alive.
Tea Live.
He did say that you can pronounce it however you want it.
But so if you hadn't heard, what happened, what triggered this was the fact that La Kafa, the brand owner of Cha Time, had prematurely and abruptly cancelled the master franchisee contract that Loop Holdings held. So Loop Holdings was the master franchisee here in Malaysia for Cha Time, and they cancelled that 24 years earlier. So it was a 30-year contract, 6 years in, they cancelled. And I think the question is to be asked to Datuk Wira Muhammad Latip is that, you know, has this painted the franchisor-franchisee agreement in a bad light? Because, you know, you take this case and you think, oh no, you know, if I was thinking about bringing a brand from overseas into Malaysia, is the franchise model the right model for me?
Now, at the same time, I think hopefully from this entire saga, we would also then know the repercussions and also the avenues, you know, by which you can, you know, basically air your grievances. Because from that blog posting, I understand that La Kafa has brought it to the International Arbitration Court in Singapore. You know, then obviously here in Malaysia, Brian Liu has made it a police report previously. You know, so they're obviously, you know, well, each side is basically stating their own case via there are various channels or various authorities. Yeah, so I guess ultimately we'll see, you know, who comes up, you know, who comes out trumps.
Yeah, yeah. Who trumps. Right? Who
trumps. There we go again with Trump. Yeah.
I have to say, though, I mean, in my mind, I believe the franchise model is the most straightforward way to build a business brand in Malaysia.
Yeah, you would think, right?
Yeah, so you go overseas, you happen to see a brand that you like, you come here and you set up this, you know, you have the branding and the supply chain and everything kind of ready to go. But again, at the end of the day, it's always that personal relationship, right? You have to have a good relationship between franchisor and franchisee. And because you have to kind of believe in the same thing, essentially, especially if it's a homegrown brand and the franchisor is looking to expand overseas, may not have the capital to do so. And, you know, goes out using a franchisee model, you have to make sure that the overseas partners will then also believe in the same brand and the principles that you want your brand to uphold.
I mean, not just that, also, you know, doing due diligence, right? Because, I mean, I would think that given what we've seen so far in this entire episode, the issue of trust has obviously been broken. You know, again, while there are accusations being hurled from both sides, Brian has a story, La Kafa have their own story. You know, like, again, I keep going back to that blog because it's really fascinating because, again, for the average Malaysian, we have mainly been hearing from Brian Liu's side, right? But not so much from La Kafa's side. You know, so, for example, according to that blog, you know, La Kafa went to the extent of sending undercover agents to investigate stuff. You know? So, you know, again, the issue of trust, or can you really trust the, you know, the franchisee to really uphold your brand's values and, you know, the SOPs and basically your contract, really? Mm. You know, so I think this is a pertinent and timely question for Dato' Wira Muhammad Latif to basically discuss that model. And really, you know, should franchisees be the way, or you know, should they just go about it on their own, really, franchisors?
Yeah. Great questions to be asked. Let's find out more on The Breakfast Grill with Dato' Wira Muhammad Latif Sarugi, Chairman of the Malaysian Franchise Association. That's at 8 o'clock. And Han, speaking about trust, at 8.30 on Current Affairs, we're going to look at precisely that. Trust and the fact that it's in decline across the world. Trust is in crisis around the world. This according to global communications marketing firm Edelman's Trust Barometer report for 2017. We spoke about this last week, but now we have an in-depth look with a conversation with the key managing director of Edelman Malaysia.
And that's right, you know, and so that trust deficit, right, you know, that we have been speaking about. And well, although I guess if I remember correctly from that same study for Malaysia, among the informed public here in Malaysia, there was a slight uptick, a few percentage points when it comes to their trust of the government. But yes, you know, generally speaking, when it comes to businesses, governments, NGOs, and even the media, and I hope that's not PFM, but yeah, no, the media in general, you know, there has been a trust deficit, and that's just declined, you know, overall. But then I think that is, I mean, it's symptomatic of what's happening on the global stage, right? You know, because it's not just Malaysia. You know, again, I bring that question back, which we raised when we first discussed this story, was that, does any society really trust their own government? You know, like that name, that word government has, you know, again, due to what we've seen over the, you know, in history and also, you know, what we're seeing in recent times, you know, there's just this distrust of government that name has become so, well, in a way, toxic, you know?
Well, it's true that around the world, there will always be segments of society that distrust the government or that distrust the media or distrust business and corporate America or what have you. Corporate Malaysia even. But the fact what's worrying about the findings of this survey is that that segment is growing.
That's and right. It's become elevated.
It's growing at a really fast pace. In fact, this is the first time in 5 years that we're seeing trust decline so broadly across all key institutions that you mentioned, Han. Now, the danger of this is when society's trust has declined at such a pace and such a level, it's easy to turn that distrust into fear. And that's what we're seeing with the rise of populism around the world. Is that the case for Malaysia? Really, I think there's always been a certain level of distrust. But whether the distrust has been growing was a question that we put to Robert Kay, Managing Director of Edelman.
Trust declined across all four institutions, across government, media, NGOs and business. And for the first time, we've moved into what we'd call distruster territory, where the index has dropped below 50. In Malaysia, it's now at 48 versus last year, we were at 51. When it comes to the system failing, 52% of Malaysians believe the system's failing. You compare that to the global figure, which is 53. We're very much in line with the global average. Here, you've got 12% believe that the system is working for them. At the extremes, you have, let's say, France, where 72% believe the system's failing them, while at the other end, you've got the UAE, where only 19% believe the system is failing them.
That was Robert Kay. Just to correct myself, Robert Kay is the Managing Director of Edelman Malaysia, not Edelman as a whole. But some really interesting points that he brought up, because, I mean, yeah, Malaysia, we've got almost half of the population who feel the system is failing us. But if you look at France, that's almost two-thirds of the population who don't believe in the system.
I know, exactly. So, you know, given that Malaysia is a developing economy, and we have often, you know, spoken about how we need to be a high-income nation, and, you know, very often that appears to be synonymous with the values that are upheld in these developed economies, right? But, big but there, you see what's happening in the States, you see what's happening in the UK, and you see what's happening in France, you're kind of thinking, is that the path we want to go down?
Exactly.
You know,
right?
It's almost we could preempt it, seeing what's out there, and perhaps chart our own course. And that is actually a big theme right now for not just Asia, right? You know, and emerging markets as a whole, because, you know, perhaps the future as we know it will not reflect the same principles and policies that we have seen, you know, developed economies uphold for this whole time.
Okay. Well, make sure you catch this more on this topic at 8:30 a.m. today. And later on the show, 9:30 a.m., The Property Show comes on every Friday. As it's the last Friday of the month, we have our monthly property legal clinic with Chris Dunn of Cheer Associates. Now, there's been calls for the government to review the Housing Developers Act. So at 9:30, we're going to take a look at some of the possible concerns that may require some tweaking. Don't miss that. Very quickly, Han, before we move on, I'd like to get a quick news update. I'm just looking at the papers this morning, and you know what's surprising to me is that there's a lot less focus on the Kim Jong-nam story today as compared to almost every other day we've seen in the past 2 weeks. Now, the Star and NST still carry these stories in the front pages, but looking at the online media, and you know, it seems like our attention has been diverted away from this story. I don't know whether this is to do with the fact that the updates or the news facts are coming trickling in. I mean, in bits and bobs, dribs and drabs here and there. So perhaps the media doesn't have too much to say about this anymore.
Yeah, somewhat. But then when you look at the Wall Street Journal, though, we are still right there.
Oh, really?
In the top left hand of the homepage there. But again, when not so much a mention of Malaysia per se, but the headline reads, "How the Hit Team Came Together to Kill Kim Jong-nam." So then following that, you got North Korea mocks China for dancing to US tunes. So yeah, I guess you're right. You know, the spotlight has kind of shifted away from Malaysia for a little bit, but I think that story has plenty of legs in it.
Yeah, international media, I think, focusing now on the geopolitical repercussions,
right,
when China cutting the its purchases of coal from North Korea last month. And I think this was all to do with North Korea's missile testing, all nuclear missile testing, and all that, I think, is happening. So the kind of global spotlight, the global lens has shifted slightly away from the details of this murder investigation. And I think it's because we're not getting
the
leads that that the police, you know, the police are not giving us the leads that the media want.
And I mean, in a way, I'm kind of glad that the spotlight has moved away from that. But at the same time, it shines a spotlight on a much bigger issue,
yeah,
though, the unpredictability of North Korea. Now, like, they're just, you know, guns blazing against their very few allies in the world anyways, or countries that they have diplomatic ties with, not just Malaysia, but China as well. So they're publicly criticizing China, and like, God knows what's going through Kim Jong-un's mind right now, though.
Well, speaking about diplomatic ties, Han, BN Youth or UMNO Youth Vice Chief Khairul Azwan Harun has urged the Malaysian government to review its ties with North Korea. Yesterday, he led a protest outside the North Korean embassy in Jalan Batai, and looking at some of the photos from that protest, it was a small crowd, but you know, not short of creative placards, shall we say. Now, there were the standard placards that said, you know, respect Malaysia and go, I think it was, you know, rising. I can't remember what it was. A couple more of these serious banners. But the funnier ones, I mean, there were more satirical ones. I think they used that opportunity. Make kimchi, not Kim dead. Which, you know, was, I don't know what to say about
I
that.
Love, well done, man. I'm giving them a clap right there. Well done. Oh, man. What a way to start the Friday. But yes, continue.
And there's also another one, which was Psy Yes. That's the Gangnam singer, P-S-Y, Psy. Psy Yes, Spy No.
Again,
putting creative juices to good use.
Look, whoever wrote those slogans or those placards, somebody give that person a job if the guy doesn't have a job ready, you know.
Like, writing headlines.
Yeah, writing headlines or slogans, you know. Heck, I need a slogan for my Tinder profile or something. I'm
oh
kidding.
My gosh. But you can use the Spy Yes. No, Psy Yes, Spy No. That's
oh
a
my
good
gosh.
And some other news is that according to Seoul's NBC TV station, South Korea was using high decibel loudspeakers last night to blast the news of the murder of Kim Jong-nam to North Korea. Because, of course, the media is so controlled in North Korea, South Korea often does this at that neutral zone. They blast out news and, according to North Korea, propaganda. But the idea of it is to ensure that the public knows the details of the death of Kim Jong-nam.
Now, that's interesting because, you know, when, I mean, given the the recent episode, and we now know about the ties between North Korea and Malaysia, and we now know that there are many North Koreans running around here in Malaysia anyways. I mean, for business, for education, like the like, you would think that they would be exposed to more information as well, and they would bring that, they would feed back into their home country, right? But apparently that's not the case. Now they're still having to resort to loudspeakers. That's quite interesting, eh?
Very quickly, we take a look at some good news. KL Bar has elected its first female lawyer as chairman. Lawyer Goh Siew Lin has become the first female to win the chairman posting the KL Bar committee. She replaces outgoing KL Bar chairman Ravinder Singh and beat two other contenders for the position at the AGM that was held yesterday. So I thought I'd end on a positive note. We'll be back with more after this on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Year Blues by the Beatles. I hope you're not blue. You're not blue, yeah, this morning.
I'm kind of thinking of a Malaysian kid or teenager who's going, yeah, blues are you. What?
That's terrible. That's great.
I know, but not for those kids, apparently.
True, true. It's a generational thing, isn't it? 6:21 on the clock. I'm Melissa Adrius with Tan Chung Han this morning. And apparently, social media is driving Americans insane. I'm both shocked and not shocked by this headline. I feel like I know it's driving us insane. And yet, I'm like, it's driving us insane.
But aren't we all a little bit insane anyways? You know.
True.
So I think this social media thing... Yeah, exactly.
It
just gives us a platform to all be insane together. Yeah.
American Psychological Association is calling it the constant checker syndrome. Social media use has skyrocketed from 7% of American adults in 2005 to 65% in 2015. And those in the 18 to 29 age range, the increase is larger, from 12% to a whopping 90%. So we're constantly, and I say this, although this article or these research findings are American-centric, I think it can be applied across the world.
Yeah, I think so, you know, because when you consider how, you know, people now need, or apparently feel like they need, to have multiple social media accounts, you know, be it Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tinder, whatever it is, you know, like it's just like nonstop. Like, where do you draw the line, right? And then now you've got these, like, remember we spoke about these new phenomenons called live chilling and the new apps, you know, being rolled out on that front, you know. So it just seems unending, though. Like, where do we draw the line there?
Well, apparently, because we're checking our emails and texts and social media accounts constantly, this is driving up our stress levels.
Hence the insane part, right?
Okay, exactly. Yeah. So on a 10-point scale, constant checkers reported an average stress level of 5.3. For the rest of Americans who were surveyed here, the average level is 4.4. So it is higher. It's a little bit higher. And I wonder whether, I mean, what do you think, Han? Do you feel by checking, by being constantly plugged in and checking, say, your email and text messages, does that drive your stress level higher?
Only if one of those emails requires me to do something, you know, like if it's just like random emails that, you know, just information. Okay, you know, it's fine. But then when it says, you got to do this now or else, like, you know, like, the station will blow up or something.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Then, like, that's when the stress levels peak. No, and I also look at the same report, you know, talking about how the highest stress levels are reserved for those who constantly check their work emails on their days off. I'm not going to point any fingers. I'm not going to name any names, you know, but I do know some people here who do that.
Wait, are you telling me... Okay, so...
I mean, it's not really rocket science.
Well, for me, ever since I've been working, I can't remember a time that I haven't checked emails, even on days off, or
really?
Even in the middle of the night, or the minute I wake up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, I'll be just like, oh, just go check if there's
right.
anything important overnight. But it's a given for me, and I don't think that's the healthiest mindset to have.
So again, you have never had the chance to really unplug or deplug yourself from social media.
It will be a mental, a conscious decision.
Really?
So when I go for vacations abroad, I make a conscious decision not to. So I'll set the email outbox. Do you know, it's interesting. I watched my own behavior with that email outbox. What? The automated response in your email outbox. I've checked my behavior with that, and I realized that for public holidays or weekends or little, even small mini breaks, I won't set it. But if I'm going for a longer holiday and one that I've made a conscious decision to unplug, then I'll set it. And I think that for me is the barometer for not checking email. Wow. If you get an automated response from my email when I'm away, you should know that I really will not be checking my email.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it sounds like we need to perform an intervention here.
I think you need help, lady.
God, like, wow.
But I'm sure there are many people who behave the same way I do, right? Like it's kind of a this is the generation where your work life balance is blurred.
No, certainly. Given the fact that our smartphones are now so ubiquitous, you know, it's just everywhere. It's just so easy. You just flip it on, and with like a touch of finger, you can easily scroll through your Twitter feed, your Facebook news feed, your emails, right? Because of the ease of access, that is what is contributing to the problem, right? As opposed to back in the good old days, you had to sit down in front of a computer, wait for the dial-up modem to like dial you in, then you can check your emails.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, there was a time when there were...
Oh God, I just had the tone of the dial-up modem in my head. It's been a while.
I know, right? Jarring, right? What happened to them?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so again...
Nostalgic.
So in a way, it is that ease of access, you know, it is a double-edged sword on one
Actually,
hand.
You're right.
You're more efficient,
you're
but you've got side effects. Yeah.
Waiting for, say, the lift and you're, you know, just... I'm just going to refresh my email inbox and see whether anything new comes in. You're right. I think that's, you know... Not just Americans, but a lot of people have that problem. Whether that's increasing the level of stress, I think it does play a huge part. But it's also because, and I wonder whether this is true for anyone else, but the things that used to give me kind of time to shut down and wind down, for instance, reading or just kind of quiet me time, you know, eating a meal. I love eating by myself. So I love, you know, that's my me time, having a quiet meal by myself. Now is accompanied by the phone. What used to be, you know, just pure enjoyment of a meal is now, you know, I've got headphones on because I'm streaming something, I'm listening to a podcast, and I'm no longer alone, but I'm plugged in.
Right.
So stuff that would get me to wind down, I don't read as much as I used to, and I wonder whether that's true for anyone else.
Well, I think the flip side, though, is, well, I wouldn't say equally, but it has its pitfalls as well, because in this day and age, where especially for our line of work, you know, in the media, where you are expected to constantly be on the cutting edge, or, you know, you have to know all the latest developments. So when you plug off or when you unplug yourself, the danger, if I may use that word, is then that you will be disconnected. Then let's say something happens while you were outside of the digital world, and then you come back, you're like, huh, I missed all this stuff.
Yeah.
What's going on? And then automatically, you know, people might judge. I don't know. I think people might judge
true.
Me, you know.
Well, speaking about, you know, how that's changed the dynamics of social relationships, right? Now more so than ever, you know, you'll be like, why you not answer my text? Why didn't you reply my email immediately? It's almost we expect an immediate response from people.
Especially once they've seen those blue ticks on your WhatsApp. You know?
So, oh, those blue ticks are terrible. My nemesis, those blue ticks.
Right, exactly.
So I wonder again, you know, WhatsApp, I think, is one of the biggest, I don't know, the reasons of why we're constantly connected. If it's not work email, it's this WhatsApp, and you're communicating constantly. So you're getting the most updated information about something without having to switch off. And that's not necessarily a good thing, because sometimes you want to delay bad news, for instance.
Yeah. But now, to be fair to work, I mean, no offense to work, but according to this report, there are other factors that can give rise to your elevated stress levels as well. That being political and cultural discussions as well. I mean, you know, there's no social media debate that's ever going to end well. You know,
that's
and like
true.
For some reason, like 3 or 4 comments in, somehow Hitler will get into the mix as well. It always goes back to Hitler.
And so, then the conversation is over.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, how do you top that? But then, fortunately, I guess in that same article, there are some recovery guidelines as well, isn't that right?
All right. So maybe what you can do is set guidelines for your social media time, and kind of make sure sure you do what you need to do before you look at your social media. So I have this deal with myself. I find myself constantly getting interrupted by WhatsApp notifications or new emails that come in. So I often tell myself, I will not check my phone or my inbox until I've done this. Oh. And the minute I do it, then I can go back and check. And it's been actually a huge time saver, because I find that I lose more time by multitasking, because I'm constantly switching between tasks. So by single tasking, I'm actually more efficient. There you go. Tell us what you think. Is social media and constantly being connected ruining your lives or making you go insane, according to this article, not my words? Tell us on Twitter at BFM Radio, hashtag TellBFM, or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. We've got the first news bulletin of the day with Lynn Mark on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Pour Some Sugar On Me by Def Leppard. Good morning, you're listening to The Morning Run, 6:39 right now. It's Friday, the 24th of February. You're with Tan Chung Han and me, Melissa Idris, this morning. We've been talking about social media and the inability to disconnect. In fact, just earlier we were talking about how social media, according to the American Psychological Association, is driving stress levels up among Americans. Now, I'm sure that's true for many of us here as well. Mm-hmm. But now, what a recent report by Nielsen has found, quite surprisingly, is that Americans, American millennials, are not as addicted to social media as we think. In fact, it's Generation X, the 35 to 49 age group category, they are the ones who are obsessed with staying connected.
I think it's the novelty of it, eh? Because, you know, for us, you know, millennials, the 35 to 49 age group.
Let's just get the categories right. So millennials would fall between the range of 18 to 34. And that's a loose and broad definition of what millennials are.
Right.
But Generation X would fall between, say, 35 to 49.
So for Generation X, you know, because they would remember a time before the internet and before social media, you know, hence, like, the novelty is very, very much, you know, resonates within that particular age group, right? Whereas for millennials, though, like, that's all they have known. Like, they grew up with the internet. They never knew a time before the internet. So it's like, no big deal. Like, the internet has always been there. It will always be there, right? So I think that could be an underlying factor when it comes to the obsession, as the article calls it, the obsession with social media, I think.
Yeah, the idea, I think Nielsen's president of the social division said the finding was quite surprising, because the going thought is that social media is vastly owned by the younger generation. And that's not true. And I think a lot of that, Han, has to do with work, right? So when you say social media, it's not just your Facebook and your Twitter and your Instagram, but also WhatsApp and, you know, staying connected, whatever chat channels you use. Email is also considered a way of staying connected. And I think all those could also play a part as to why this age group is increasingly connected as opposed to the rest.
No, also, I think at the same time, another factor is this, though, that those adults from 35 to 49, you know, they are a lot more scattered, right, geographically, right? You know, because I'm sure they have moved for jobs or family and whatnot, so they are a lot more advanced in life. You know, so the need for social media to stay connected, as you put it, you know, it's a lot stronger. Hence, you know, them having to spend more time on social media. Whereas for kids, you know, like the 18s to early 20s, their lives are still very much concentrated in either, you know, high school or college, right? So everyone's on the same campus anyways, you know. So, I mean, yes, obviously that doesn't mean they're not using social media. That's not what the report is saying. They are, but, you know, the need is not as strong, because I would think, you know, it can be complemented by good old traditional, you know, hangout, chill out time in the dorms, for example.
Or live chilling, as we talked about a couple of days ago.
Live chilling.
Where you no longer hang out at your buddy's house, but now just have the phone there with your webcam on and, you know, chill in front of this webcam in the comfort of your own home. But still together but separate.
Hey, but it's a cost saving, right? You know, you don't have to spend petrol money driving to your friend's house.
I think it's pointless. I'm so sorry. What? Some judgment coming from
terrible.
Me. But
auntie, are you auntie?
But it seems, though, that that staying connected isn't just causing stress levels to spike, but staying connected on your smartphone is ruining your posture, because technology is transforming how we hold ourselves, and we're now contorting our bodies into what this New Zealand physiotherapist is calling the eye hunch. The eye hunch. There's a name for it. Can I just repeat that? The eye hunch. Some people call it tech's neck. Some people call it eye posture. But eye hunch is the going term.
I think that's just overkill with all those terms. No, yeah, I mean,
there's an entire eye economy.
An eye dictionary. But then, look, I mean, it does make sense, because, you know, like, tying these two reports together, you know, going back to that Nielsen report that we spoke about, right? When it comes to the Generation X, you know, they spend about 7 hours a week on social media.
Wow.
Whereas, you know, those millennials, they spend about 6 hours and 19 minutes.
Maybe, right? That 7 hours is a large part at work.
Well, don't tell the boss. What's wrong with you, Mel? Come on, now the secret is out. So given, like, the amount of time that we spend on social media and also, you know, on our screens, so one would think that would have physical implications, hence the eye hunch and eye posture.
But it's true, though. I mean, I don't know about you, but I have the worst posture. And I do slump over my phone. So essentially, the average head weighs about 10 to 12 pounds.
Except for some members of the BFM Morning Run. I'm kidding.
Don't talk about Chrissy Chua. Anyway, so the average head weighs about 10 to 12 pounds. And when we bend our necks forward at about 60 degrees, as we do when we try to use our smartphones, the stress that we place on our neck increases to 60 pounds. So what was, say, 10 to 12 is now 60 pounds, which is the weight of about 5 gallons of paint. So if you can imagine, that's the amount of stress you're placing on our neck. And, you know, when you just look around you in the public area, how many people are in that posture? So many people are hunched over their phones.
And I bet, just as you mentioned that, we've got all our listeners now checking their posture, sitting up straight.
I'm going to sit up a little straighter now, since, you know, it doesn't put, I won't get eye hunched.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Auntie Mel.
But you know, it's good to sit up straight, but it's not just physiological, it's also psychological, because studies have shown that people with that posture doesn't just reflect our emotional states. It can also trigger emotional states. It can cause emotional states. So when we're sad, we slouch. We slouch also when we feel scared or when we feel powerless. So it's that almost animal instinct to retreat within yourself. And if you spend 6 hours, 7 hours a day in this position, it can affect the way you perceive the world and yourself.
Unless if you're hunched over your phone while looking at kitten videos, then I think it balances out the effects, right? That is net neutral, right? It's like,
or
yeah,
that
zero.
Apple pen. I just found out that.
Girl, you are so late to this party, man.
Word. It was a minute of my life wasted completely, I have to say. Don't Google that. But people, studies have also shown that people with clinical depression adopt this posture that eerily resembles the eye hunch. So next time you're using your smartphone, make a conscious decision to sit up straight, because you'll feel better. Not, and you're not just helping your back, but you'll also feel better about the outlook, and your mood will improve.
And you know how people always talk about they judge others based by their posture. You know, that's why, for example, when you go in for interviews, they always talk about how you got to stand up straight, have a firm handshake, you know, posture, you know, all that stuff. But then I'm thinking, like, if this eye hunch becomes more, you know, mainstream, I guess, you know, will that school of thought go away? Because if everyone's hunched anyways, you know, looking at their phones, like, you know, who cares about good posture?
Isn't that terrible? That means you'll have an entire generation with neck pain and lower back pain and, you know, just feeling uncomfortable. I know friends or colleagues of mine who've been sitting, you know, who are desk bound often, sit, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. Young, late 20s, early 30s, already suffering from neck pain, or this tech's neck, because it's not about the smartphone, but also the computer, right? Because you're in front of a screen. Apparently, there appears to be a linear relationship between the size of your device and the extent to which it affects you. So the smaller the device, the more you must contract your body to use it, and the more shrunken and inward your posture, and the more submissive you are likely to become.
I think that's from the inside looking out, you know, outward kind of thing, right? You're more submissive, and I would think that the external perception might be true as well. If you're constantly hunched over, then people will perceive you to be more subordinate.
Yeah,
perhaps.
Yeah. Introverted.
Yeah, because you got the boss posture, right? You ever heard of the boss posture? It's like, oh, no, chest out, you know, kind of.
No,
never heard of that. But okay, well.
But I'm seeing it being demonstrated in front of me.
Too bad this is radio, you know.
Which is quite, you know, boss-like. Yeah, I like it, Han. It's a new side of you.
Yeah. Hey. Whoa, hey.
Okay, all right. So we've got the news coming up at the top of the hour. That's in about 12 minutes or so. But after that, Market Watch with Tim Mulholland of TGM Limited in Chicago to talk about some of the recent developments with the U.S. economy. So make sure you stay tuned for that. We've got Beck coming up with The New Pollution on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.